We are now enrolling for the How to Hire the Best course, Become an Employer of Choice to Attract the A Players You Want on Your Team. You can register at tapthepotential.com/course.
Tolerance is a non-negotiable. So our tolerance level is actually a lack of awareness, a lack of clarity as to what works for us.
You're listening to the Profit by Design podcast. Episode 46. You work hard in your business. On the Profit by Design podcast, we ask the big question: what has your business done for you lately? Hi, I'm Dr. Sabrina Starling, the business psychologist, the author of How to Hire the Best, and your co-host on the Profit by Design podcast. Weekly, my co-host, Mike Bruno, and I bring you tips, tools, and strategies from our own experiences and from the experiences of our guests who are entrepreneurial thought leaders and real-life entrepreneurs, all to support you in making intentionally profitable and sustainable business decisions to live the lifestyle you desire. Is your business running your life? Are you fed up with working crazy long hours only to lay awake at night worrying about cash flow or feeling totally angry and frustrated over what your team isn't getting done? If so, listen up. I've got something I want to share with you. At Tap the Potential, we have our small group coaching program that is designed for business owners just like yourself who are done. You're done with the way things are going and you're ready for a change. And not just any little band-aid change, you want a life-changing business transformation. That's what we specialize in at Tap the Potential. We turn life and cash-sucking small businesses into highly profitable, great places to work, and then we send those business owners on a four-week vacation while the business runs without them. If that sounds good to you, I invite you to check out our small group coaching program at Tap the Potential, where we integrate Profit First, The Pumpkin Plan, and my book, How to Hire the Best, into our small groups to produce these transformations, all the while we're working with you to be the leader you need to be to create this business that can run on its own while you have more life. Check us out, tapthepotential.com. The conversation I'm sharing with you is one I had a couple of weeks ago with Anne Beaulieu. This conversation has continued to stick with me. Anne and I got into a pretty deep discussion about what success really is and the impact of chasing money and success and perfectionism in our lives. I just want to give you a heads up as we get into this episode. It's pretty deep and we get vulnerable. So with that, let me share her bio. Anne Beaulieu holds a master's degree in economics and is a chartered financial analyst. She was previously a finance economist for Treasury and Debt, province of New Brunswick. At Spectrum, Anne worked directly with brokers covering the sales territories of the province of Quebec and the four maritime provinces. By the age of 26, Anne was the youngest assistant vice president, client servicing at TAL's Investment Management Funds, a company with over $22 billion under management at the time. Anne has gone on to become an internationally accredited emotional intelligence coach who coaches in English, French, and Chinese Mandarin. She is internationally accredited with the Coach Training Academy, Certified Coaches Alliance, International Coach Federation, and the Authentic Speaker Academy for Leadership. She delivers self-awareness tools, skills, and techniques that empower us to claim our inner voice and fully take charge of our lives, both in business and personal. She's the author of the Emotionally Intelligent Way book series and has written 28 books to date. All right, Anne, we're going to have a fun conversation here today. We've been chatting ahead of the recording here and getting into things, and I kept having to say, stop, don't say that. We need to save it for the podcast. Our profit designers are going to want to hear this too. So I'm really eager to dig in with you. You are an emotional intelligence coach. You have a tremendous background in finance. And as you described it to me, you said, I am the two ends of the spectrum all blended together. So I know for myself, as the business psychologist, I didn't start out as a coach. I had a long, winding trajectory to get where I went. I want to know about you. How did you go from your career in finance into coaching and emotional intelligence?
If you've ever seen the movie The Matrix, I met Morpheus. He's the man I call Morpheus. His name is Dove Barron. I was like at the top of my game. I was doing super well in coaching and everything. But I had an emotional hole in my heart. I was the woman who had the $1 million in the bank. But yet, when I stood in front of the Christmas tree in the morning, when it was like 4 o'clock in the morning and my children were about to, you know, to come downstairs at some point, I have 3 children, I'd stand in front of the tree alone and cry, not knowing why. I was crying. In the eyes of the world, I had everything. Why would I cry? I just felt alone. I felt something was missing, but I didn't know what it was. And what I realized with Morpheus was that I was missing me, my own emotional presence. I was the type of people like a pretty shell. I was physically present, but emotionally, I had checked out decades ago. Decades. So I had missed over 30-some years of my life, and I didn't know. Until I met him, and then I had to face what I had done, who I was. I had very little compassion. And I hit the shitter, what I call the shitter. It's that place where it's ugly, and there's a lot of snot and tears. And it took me a while, months, but I crawled out of that hole with compassion in my heart. And then it became what I call not on my shift. I will help everyone who wants to be helped so that never happens again. Because money isn't everything.
Wow. What a powerful, just the life experience that you just packed into 2 minutes right there, and the wisdom, the statement that money isn't everything. You know, so many of our entrepreneur listeners are striving, and almost every other day we have conversations with entrepreneurs who say, I want to have 5 million in the bank. I want to have 20 million in the bank. And I always want to know, well, why? What is that about for you? What is that going to, is that a means to an end? Is it just a random number that you pulled out of the air? What is it? And for myself, I know that when I reached a certain level of success as a psychologist, it was very similar to what you're describing. I outwardly had everything that I needed. We could travel. Things were just in place. And I wasn't happy. I would come home from work and I would just zone out. And I thought, is this what the rest of my life is going to be? And for me, that was my big shift. It was that question of, is this what it's going to be from now on? And my answer to that was, I sure hope not. And that started me on a path. So I know you do emotional intelligence work. I do too. I know you're a big believer in the power of questions, and we're going to get to that in a minute. But let's unpack for our profit designers, what does emotional intelligence mean? Because EQ, emotional intelligence, that's thrown out all the time. What does it mean?
When, imagine you're sitting in front of your computer and you decide you're a profit by design entrepreneur. So you open, most likely, do you have an Excel spreadsheet somewhere, right?
I hope our profit designers do.
So you open your spreadsheet and you start performing functions. You can copy, you can delete, you can do all this stuff. And you know that your Excel spreadsheet does that for you, right?
Yes.
So if next person, says Sally, sits in front of your computer, your assistant, and opens up your spreadsheet, the spreadsheet does the same functions. Do you agree?
Yes.
So the computer, the program makes no difference who's part of it. Now, in our mind, we have a programming. It's called an ego, and it's everything, our conditioning. It's everything that we've ever learned. Our ego tells us that we behave differently depending whether Sally sits in front of us, John sits in front of us. No, just like an Excel program, the computer does what it does. So an emotional intelligence coach, what I do is I go inside the programming. Do you know that with this person, you hit delete and then you hit copy and then you do this and you do that? Do you realize that? So I expose emotional patterns. And when the person sees their mind programming, I'm very comfortable navigating people's mind. I navigate my own mind. So I know where the exits are.
It's always good to know where our exits are. I couldn't agree more.
Exactly. And to be able to lift that programming and say, look at it. And without judgment or rejection, which is crucial, just look at it, examine it, observe it. Does it work for you? If it works for you, keep it for the time being. If it doesn't work, change it now. Most people won't change, even though it's painful, but they don't know how. They wouldn't even know where to start. So I, like a GPS, I show them, these are the blind spots. These are the exits. Is that what you want? And I assist them achieve that.
I love that analogy. I want to build on that and talk about questions, because when I explain to our strategists and teach our coaches at Tap the Potential who work with our clients what coaching is and how to do it effectively, I use the analogy of our client is in a dark room. It's our job to go in and take a spotlight, a flashlight, and shine it in all these different corners. And it's not to tell them, look in this corner, look in that corner. It's to use questions that make them curious to look over there, look over there, look over there. Look, there are 10 exits out of this room. You get to pick. And it's about the questions that we ask. Questions we ask determine the solutions we find. You ask a lot of powerful questions. And EQ Blueprint for Closing Sales, in your bio, you start your bio off with the powerful question of, what kind of success story are you living? And you follow that with, what kind of success story do you want to live?
Well, as a coach, is in order to know where you're going, you got to know where you've been. It's all of us. So most people, they only focus on, I want that. But would they be willing to look as to the reason why they may not have it or they may not experience it? Because no matter what we want, what determines what we live is the programming. So in order to understand what people, the success that they want, they must understand the definition of success that they've been living. And most people are pretty vague around it. When you say define success specifically, and I know because I used to be that person, and that's where I drew that, We must feel our success. We must feel it. Otherwise, how would we know we're successful?
Right. It's the experience that we want to have. And I think there are so many societal messages about what success is supposed to look like. And that's really what I hear in your story, is you bought into that. You pushed really hard to achieve that level of success that society defined. And there was emptiness in it for you because it wasn't right for you.
Of course, of course. I mean, I remember when I started looking at my programming and I realized I was a workaholic. I had 2 burnouts. So I realized with 3 children, to have your 15-year-old look at you and say that they're so angry because they felt that, you know, I wasn't there for them emotionally. It's, would you feel success no matter how much money in the bank? No. It was, for me, it was failure. So it didn't matter. So I had to really, really stop and ask myself, what does success mean to me? See, I have a lot of degrees. Actually, I used to say that I have more degrees and certifications than a performing monkey on crack. I have 18. I have that kind of brain. And people go like with all the accolades, way, it's great. This is like out of this world. And I say to them, but I didn't feel it. I accumulated them because I wanted to prove to the world that I had a right to exist, that I had a right to be here. And that if I was smart and if I had all the degrees and the money and the right dress and the right hair, the right makeup, then people might just, quote unquote, like me more. But what did that say about me? All it did was my external reality pointed to that emotional hole within. It was screaming. I mean, our external reality is a metaphor for what's going on within. So if you don't have the relationships you want in your life, if you don't have the money you want, whatever is going on, look at the programming.
Yeah.
It's the only thing that will change it.
And, you know, on the Profit by Design podcast, we've had quite a few conversations around living intentionally, designing our businesses to support the lifestyle we desire, and building the profit in rather than going after the revenue, because the revenue often is a vanity number. It's some metric that society has told us we should be chasing, and it doesn't lead to real fulfillment. And it's that piece around what is real fulfillment. And I think all of us have had experiences in our childhood that lead us, that makes the programming, that leads us to decide this is success. If I do this, I am successful. That story, though, is going to be different for any of us. You and I have some very similar stories here because I was all about achievement too. I've talked on the podcast about how I had a 4.0 in college and graduate school and the insane pressure that that created in my life. It was totally unnecessary, but that's what I thought I was supposed to do. That is emptiness. And when I transitioned into coaching, the very first book that I wrote is Success from the Inside Out. And it really was part of my own exploration of what is my definition of success. And I remember when I rewrote my definition of success and my vision for what I wanted to live and experience, not my vision for what I wanted to achieve, but my vision for what I wanted to experience in life, how good that felt to start claiming that. So I'm curious, how do you help your clients really hone in on their own definition of success? What are some of the tools that you use?
The first thing, I help them feel. Our society doesn't want us to feel. We must feel our truth in order to change it. But many of us, me included in the past, I was scared of feeling. If I felt, then I would feel what was working and I would feel what wasn't working in my life. So with my clients, the first thing that I ask is, what do you need right now? Which is vastly different than what do you want right now? Because someone might say, we talked at the earlier on, and someone might say, I had a client who came in and said, a new client, they say, well, we want to move from $15 million in sales a year to $25 million. Help us do that. That's what they wanted. When I asked them, what do you need right now? They stopped. Why do you need that? What will it do for you? And by digging, by that feeling, you see these entrepreneurs, they start shaking because then for them, it represented like safety. Some of it is like safety. Some of it was actually they wanted to stop feeling like a piece of crap. They had so much self-loathing that they thought that if they had all the money in the world, that would, quote unquote, cure them from their self-loathing. But nothing external can fix the internal. As James Allen said, so within, so without. It's the internal that determines the external. That's why I believe your book was called, Success from the Inside Out, because that's the way it works.
Yes. Yeah. And that's so powerful. I know that you are hitting some hot buttons right now as our profit designers are listening. When I was reading the EQ blueprint for closing sales, one of the case examples that you start off with really hit home for me on a personal level because I could see myself in it, but I also see it so often in our clients. And it's the one around what happens to the strategic plan. And you give a quote, or you cite some statistics by Broadview, that 68% of leaders believe their organization is good at developing strategy. But of that 68%, 61% of respondents acknowledge that their firms often struggle to bridge the gap between strategy formulation and its day-to-day implementation. Why would an organization fail to follow its strategic plan? Anne?
Well, usually it's because they are flying by the seat of their pants. Most companies I work with, when they fail to follow their strategic planning, what I usually hear is what I call the victim. But you don't understand. But this happened and that happened and we had to change this. But what it says to me, it's non-accountability. They failed to be non-accountable. It's a finger pointing. So-and-so's fault. If so-and-so had done it, then I would have been able to do that. But when someone speaks like that, where is their own accountability? What is important to them? What are the values that they live by? See, I go straight to values because values goes towards need. When we know our core value, when we live by them, we want to be accountable. We need to be accountable ourselves. We operate from a completely different perspective.
You are speaking my language. This is so key. So one of the things we have our clients do when they start working with us is identify their immutable laws. And those, it's the core values, but it's the 3 to 5 that are biggest core values that are deal breakers. And when they're violated, we get upset. And it's exactly that. When you feel compelled that you have to address it, you can't let it slide. That's where the accountability comes in. And so when we build our businesses around our core values and we build teams around those core values, it's not just accountability for the leader and the owner of the business, but the team members feel that same sense of pull. I've never pulled that together in that way around the accountability and the core values. That's big, Anne. Thank you.
You're very welcome. One of the first value that I ask leaders, entrepreneurs and business leaders to throw out the window, it will not shock you because you know, tolerance is one of the worst thing that you can do for your business. Did you hear me?
So you're telling us, you're giving us permission to be less tolerant. I love it.
Okay. What is tolerance? Let's define tolerance. Most people, it's being nice. When they're tolerant, it's like they keep their mouth shut. They don't say what needs to be said. But tolerance, what we tolerate, persists. Some people who, you know, if they cannot follow their strategic plan, often they don't have tolerance. They lack tolerance, I should say. Because tolerance is knowing where our non-negotiables are. That's where the accountability comes in. Most people, we're very quick, all of us, especially me in the past, I was very quick to say, oh, well, if it were me, it's going to go like this and it's going to go like that. And we all know this after, you know, something bad happens, we replay it in our head. I should have said this. I should have done that. That should shows that tolerance was displayed in that moment. And tolerance never, a world was never built on shoulds.
So if we are aware that we have been too tolerant,
yeah,
what do we do? How do we start building our intolerance muscle?
Well, it's that tolerance is a non-negotiable. I'll give you an example because those are big words. And I believe like a 5-year-old needs to be able to understand this. That's how we know if we understand something. Let's say, would you date someone who smokes?
Not anymore. I have in the past, not anymore.
So when I was, you know, with my mentor, he asked me, because he wanted to show me how bad tolerance was. He says, would you date someone who smokes? And I said, no. He said, what if they stopped smoking a year ago? Would you date them? And I was like, yeah. What if they stopped smoking the day before, an hour before? And I was like, I don't think so. No. Why not? What's the difference? The difference was the tolerance level. And so by the time that he was done, he says, what if they're a social smoker? What if they only smoke? So he says, you came in telling me they must not smoke. But he says, I poked holes in all of it. So our tolerance level is actually a lack of awareness, a lack of clarity as to what works for us. So when we remove the tolerance, we know exactly what we will accept, what we will never accept, and what are our non-negotiables. And for a business with a strategic plan, it must become non-negotiables. Like, we must achieve that and do what it takes for that.
So what is, from the sales side of things, and I think that's a really interesting place to start looking at emotional intelligence and how that impacts sales. When you're in sales in a business that consistently throws out the strategic plan, how does that undermine the sales process and your ability to function effectively?
Well, many companies, like multinationals, actually I'm delivering a keynote in November for salespeople at their national sales and marketing conference. And that when that happens, when the strategic plan goes out the window, most salespeople are mobile. They spend very little time in the office. And for them, they think that the accountability system for those salespeople is their CRM, you know, their client retention models, or that virtual assistant, or even that person in the office. But when the strategic plan goes out the window, it doesn't matter what the CRM, how good the CRM or that virtual assistant is. That person is left on their own. And there is no greater accountability system than the accountability system that we have at an emotional intelligence level. For example, I ask salespeople, how will you remain, the powerful questions, how will you remain emotionally present when the client is not in front of you? How will you be emotionally present, be raw, be vulnerable, be real when the client is in front of you? And then you see head scratching.
Because you're asking things that are not about the sales strategy. You're asking about how they're showing up.
Exactly. Because see, when I come in, it's in this day and age, when you look at the digital age and anyone can buy anything online, like the similarity of products and services, no matter how good we think our product is, what makes a client come back over and over again is the relationship. The foolish mistakes that most salespeople make is thinking that the relationship ends when that customer hands over their check, their credit card, the cash. That's not the end of the relationship. That's the beginning. And an emotionally intelligent salesperson understands this. They're the ones who actually close the most sales because they understand that their customers come in with a long list of wants. You know, when they click on that computer screen, there's all these choices. But what they actually need, that feeling that they're looking for to experience with that product or service, the salesperson who's emotionally intelligent understands their needs and delivers on the needs. That's what bonds us, because we bond over our needs.
Yeah.
So, no one likes to be sold.
No.
No one needs that.
No, we don't need that. So I'm curious. I've heard you say that asking, as a salesperson, asking a prospective client, customer, can I help you? I've heard you say that's killing sales. Why is that?
Massive. Because see, when, and it's happened to all of us, right? We ladies, we walk into a store, maybe it's a dress shop, and we have that salesperson coming to us going, can I help you? But the thing is, there's a difference. So when we say, can I help you? Like, how many of us have ever walked out of a store without buying a single item? Even though the salesperson had come to us asking, can I help you? Like, I believe we've all done it. And if you're like me, After that salesperson asked me that and I walked out of the store, I didn't make eye contact with them. I actually walked around, avoided them. And so therefore, just coming to the sale asking, can I help you? Even if we tell the person, you know what? Because usually they're going to answer, I'm just browsing. Oftentimes, I'm just browsing. I'm just looking. And usually the salesperson will reply something like, well, I'll stand right over there. If you have any questions or concerns, please feel free to ask me. I'm here to help you. And even with that, most of us, all of us actually, I believe, at some point, we've walked out of that store without buying that sale. And that's why it's risky business. Because when we just ask that, we run the risk of that customer walking away without us closing that sale. So we've got to go deeper.
So what should we be asking instead?
Well, we need to ask, we need to look for the feeling that the customer is looking to experience. So if you walk into a shop and you say, I want to buy a bicycle, let's say, right? So most salesperson would say, well, what do you want? Which model do you want? That's the second level of asking. And the person might say, well, I don't know. Or yeah, I've done some research. And then the salesperson goes telling all the features on every models. And before you know it, that person gets overwhelmed. There's too much data. They get confused and they walk away without closing that sale. It's happened to all of us. So we've got to go deeper. There's a third level. We've got to look for the feeling that the customer is looking to experience. Why do they need that bicycle? Why do they want it? We hit the why, we connect that feeling to that bicycle for that customer. Mm-hmm. That's a sale. Mm-hmm. That's why we buy. We buy for the feeling that it's going to give us.
Yes, that is so true. In your experience, when a salesperson is feeling pressured to get the sale, because that happens in every organization, there's pressure. They've got to hit their numbers, their quota. What are some tools to manage ourselves better so that we are able to stay present with the prospect's feelings and what they're needing?
Well, for me, it's two levels. The first one is, what do I need right now? Because we're all feelers. I believe we're all energy. And if I ever thought that once upon a time that I could hide my feelings and emotions, yeah, I may hide it to the people who are unaware. But most of us, I would say all of us, we can tell when something's amiss. We may not know exactly what it is. So being that anxious cucumber in front of someone else, that never helps. And for me, one of the things that grounds me when I start feeling frazzled, I ask it might seem like a weird question, but it's a powerful one for me, which is, where is she? She is the little girl inside of me. It's the one that I hear the giggles, the one that is fun, the one that looks at life with like magic and wonderful eyes. I bring her back up because people are attracted to that. We all love someone who has presence, charisma, someone who is vulnerable. Well, that's that inner child that people call. I know it might sound weird. How can I close more sales by bringing out my inner child? The inner child is the key to vulnerability. By being vulnerable, we actually bond, genuinely bond people to us. People who get anxious over closing the sales, often, to me, it's an indication that they failed to develop a deep relationship with that customer. Because the customers that we have a deep relationship with, we know we can call them. They're going to have a big order with us. We know that when we call them, they're reliable. We can count on us. And we've all had those customers. We can do it with every single one. But it's work, internal work.
And the vulnerability that is needed to bring out our inner child and be that inner child in the relationship is significant.
Massive. My clients, like I have a specific client in mind. She's a woman entrepreneur and she's building a multinationals. And she comes onto the call and she's like, at first, she's like, tell me about your week. She doesn't want to know my success. She wants to know my blunders. She wants to say where I really screwed up, or that I didn't do well, and this, like, oh my God, what was I thinking? And the more I share, I can feel the relief wash over her, because it's that mind. And usually she will say something like, oh my goodness, thank goodness I'm not the only one. Vulnerability is powerful. It makes us feel connected. It gives us the courage to look within, so that when someone shines that light onto our blind spots, because to shine that light, to have that flashlight in our hand, like you discussed earlier, we had to face that vulnerability. We had to face that pain. We overcame it. That's why we have the flashlight. We know that blind spot.
Well, and then when we reveal our vulnerability to others, it creates safety and trust.
That it does.
It's okay to be vulnerable. I am not the only one who has these flaws, makes these mistakes, does these silly things that get me in trouble.
It is. And people are like, why do you share so openly? Why? Like, say an open book. If you can read about, I've shared about stuff that would make most people cringe, because my upbringing was shattering, was horrific. Anything you can imagine on the list, times 10. I see your face. It was brutal. And people are like, how can you share so openly? Because I understand the power of vulnerability. Vulnerability is intimacy. And we think intimacy is with another person. No, it's with ourselves. It's into me see. So my vulnerability is me having a deep relationship with me.
So say that again, because I want our listeners to be sure that they catch what you just said. It is into me see.
Into intimacy. When people think of intimacy, adults, we may think of sex or something like that. That's when we become intimate. But the real intimacy is into me see. I see into myself. I feel me. And the reason, that's why feeling and going into our needs and bonding over our needs. The people you're most intimate with are the people you're most genuinely bonded with. We felt into those needs and we fulfilled them. So intimacy is that vulnerability. It's crucial because we are the common denominator with every experience that we have. I ask my clients when they first come to see me, how many relationships do you think you have? And I get that, I don't understand the question. What relationships do you have? And they start listing. I have one with my dog. I have one with my wife. I have one with my husband. I have one with my kids. And they go on and on and on. And I go, you have one relationship. One. You're the vessel. You contain them all. The vessel can be shallow or it can be deep. And they're like, I don't understand. I said, the depth of the relationship that you have with yourself, with ourselves, determines the depth of the relationships we can have with others. A cargo ship that can hold 1,000 tons, if you try to put 3,000 tons on it, it will sink. It's no different for us. And life is relationship. So vulnerability is key. Mm-hmm. Intimacy is through vulnerability.
Mm-hmm. So in your opinion, what is the most important question we could ever ask anyone? Family members, our employees, kids?
What am I feeling right now? Because it grounds us back. And it's not a question that we answer, I'm feeling good. No, it's we pause. We slow down our breath. We sink within. We go check within. What am I feeling right now? And we remain silent. We allow that bubble to come up without definition, just feeling it. And people are usually shocked that what comes up is usually quite intense, quite powerful, but like every bubble, it bursts. And once it bursts, it's a feeling of peace. There's that vastness and we see clearly, but people prefer to be busy because our society say, be busy, be busy, be busy. But when we stop and feel, we know exactly where we're going. We know what we're doing because we feel into it. We know what we need, and we know what is needed beyond words.
That is such a powerful question to get us out of our head.
Yep.
We live a lot in our heads. Busy entrepreneurs, I mean, you touched on that part about just go, go, go. We're in our heads. We're not tuning in to what am I feeling?
Well, that used to be me. And it's a vicious cycle because the less I felt, the angrier I became. I was full of rage because it was like, well, then I'll just make more money. I'll just get another degree. I'll buy another cat. I'll get another dog. It was all that. So I kept looking externally. But the moment that I stopped, and it was scary for me, very scary, because I had stopped feeling a long time ago. When I walked in Morpheus' office, when I realized, when he made that crack in my head so sunlight could come in, I walked in his office full of rage. And I was like, how conscious am I? And he looked at me and he lifted his finger. It was like 1%. And I said to him, he didn't say anything. He just said one. And I took it as like 1% conscious. And I said to him, I burst out crying. And I said, then I'm just like a sociopath. I'm just like my father. I'm just like my mother. Oh my goodness, I should be locked up. And that's the woman who had all those degrees, those certifications, like all that white picket fence, everything, but yet felt so empty inside. And it was by feeling that void within that I was able to fill it. No amount of money, person, situation, or thing can ever fill the emotional hole we have within. We're the only ones. We are that powerful. We can show a client with a flashlight, like, look, that's the blind spot. Fill it. Can we fill it for them? No, never. They make that choice, but people are afraid of choice. That removes the victim. That makes them fully accountable. See, we come back full circle.
Mm-hmm. So I want to talk coach to coach here for a minute. It is the most amazing experience to be a coach and to watch someone who is shut down reconnect with who they are and what they need and what they're feeling. And I wonder what, that's my experience of it, that it's just, I look at it with child's eyes, like incredible wonder. And I've had people tell me that was so powerful. And I think I have no idea what I did other than ask you the questions that helped you to connect with yourself. What is your experience as a coach of taking people through that process?
It's as you were speaking, I can feel the goosebumps coming up and my voice break. And I love my clients. Goodness gracious. I really love them. People are shocked how much I care. I do. I've seen enough violence to last me a lifetime. And to see someone like come to me and say, like, look what I've made happen. Look. I did that website, I landed that client, and the joy that they're feeling, and you know, to clap with them and be happy with them. And when things don't go well, to go with them, to know that Morpheus, I call Morpheus like Dove Baron, is walking with me every step of the way. It's an amazing feeling. It's a safety. And for me to see that, to feel that with them, that's what fulfillment is. Helping each other. We walk each other home. I believe that. We're all equals. We're all in this together. We all want the same thing. We all want to feel peaceful, free. We want to feel loved and validated. And that's a coach to coach. That's what we do for our clients. We bring them home to themselves.
I love what you said. We walk each other home.
I do. I learn from my clients as much as they learned from me. I learned as much. And they get like, why? And I say, because I hear everything I say first.
Yes. You know, in that, I really feel like I have gotten to be a better and better person. And I mean, get to be as in, like, I get to because of the work that I do with my clients. because I can't not walk my talk. If it's going to come out of my mouth and I'm going to talk to you about it, and it's something that's challenging you, and I'm calling you to be your higher, better self, at the same time that I'm doing that, I'm calling myself to be my higher, better self.
Yes. You know, one of the most was brutal to my ego, but every judgment I've ever made on anyone, it's a judgment about me. If I see something in someone, something great, to see it, I had that flashlight. So I've seen it within me. And if I judge someone, if I see something when I call quote unquote bad, well, I have that same within me. And if I'm triggered, it's unresolved. I can see you chuckling.
That's so true. You know, when we're triggered, we're unresolved on something. And that's where our growth, our next opportunity to grow is right there.
And that's where the real courage comes in. I used to think that courage was to keep going no matter what. That's bullshit. That's how I burned out. Because I would just keep going. No, real courage is doing what is needed, which might be vastly different than what we're used to. Real courage is stepping into the uncertainty, the unfamiliar. Be willing to ask the person who's holding the flashlight, how do I hold my own flashlight? So that blind spot is no more within me. That's real courage.
Mm-hmm. So I have a feeling that our prophet designers are listening and they think, I need more Anne. This is phenomenal. And you have a tremendous body of work out there. So I want you to speak a little bit about your books and what your next project is. Tell us about that.
Well, it's going to sound crazy. 2 years ago, Morpheus asked me, what do you love to do? And I said, I love writing, but I am no writer. That's exactly what I said. He was like, really? Why don't you start writing? I wrote 30 books in 2 years.
30 books in 2 years.
Yeah. I can put my ego aside and it's a download. I can't explain, it's a download. I can write 1,100 words an hour in flow. That's just me. And I write case studies for salespeople, case studies for emotional intelligence-driven sales, how to develop relationships. I write fairy tales, adult fairy tales for developing emotional intelligence, because no one likes to be told. No one. So what I do is I take a metaphor and the reader runs it side by side. If I've done my job well, they can say, I do that. Oh, crap, I have that result. Oh, here's what I can do about it. So those are the adult fairy tales. And I've got a new series coming up, which is Set Yourself Free. And it's to help women develop a phenomenally healthier relationship with money. Because besides being an EQ coach, I'm also a chartered financial analyst. I'm a finance economist. I have a legal translator. We can go into all the woo-woo diplomas. But it's like helping women how to do financial mothering. Financial mothering is shouldering other people's responsibilities. It could be their kids, their spouse, their parents. How do you say no financially to someone you love? Most people don't know how to do that. So they go into the nagging. Then there's another book coming up, which is how to, you know, freeing yourself from financial nagging. It's a big destroyer of relationship. Most people in relationship, what they fight constantly about, it's money. When there's money, they fight how to spend it. And when they don't have money, it's how to earn it.
Or how to spend the little bit that they have.
Oh, exactly. So I come in and I bring the emotional intelligence and the financial background, and I run both side by side so that not only the person can develop a healthier relationship with themselves, and at the same time, have tools to handle money better, to have a better relationship with money.
You know, and as a psychologist, it's my experience that how we do money is how we do everything. And when we are not in a good relationship with money, it's really about our relationship with ourselves, and it spills over and impacts our relationships with others.
I totally agree. Remember that Christmas morning? In the eyes of the world, I had everything. Everything. But I had an emotional hole within. I had a poverty mindset. I grew up dirt poor, ghetto. So I've seen both ends. Dirt poor and a lot of money that I could buy anything I wanted. And seeing both ends, I saw that the problem, the common denominator was me. I was the problem. I had a poverty mindset because I wasn't able to feel anything. I was completely shut down, 99%. I had to crawl my way out of back hole. I had to really get to know myself, get intimate with myself at an emotional intelligence level. And how we do money, it is how we do everything. There's one vessel. People tell me I can be a perfectionist at work. I love a job well done. But at home, I'm relaxed. And I go, bullshit. I said, I can walk into your closet right now. Tell me, is it color-coded? Did you take those towels and put the four corners neatly? Do you get upset when your underwear drawer is like all messed up? And I just go like, and I know because it used to be me. If we're a perfectionist one place, we're a perfectionist elsewhere. I'm a recovering perfectionist.
I am too. We're going to walk each other home on that one. Yes, that's going to be just something that I deal with through my life and I'll always be recovering. So you have a really fun gift for our profit designers and I want to give you a chance to share that with them.
My website is walkinginside.com. My company's name is Walking Inside Resources, Inc. Because I believe that life is a journey within. We walk each other home. So that's the name of the company. So walkinginside.com. And if you go onto the website, there's a spinning wheel. You know, like you see at the fairies and the carnivals, you spin the wheel. And there's like, I think, 12 or 15 books there. And you get a free book by spinning the wheel. That's how it works.
How fun.
It is. I love it. I really like it.
That has been phenomenal. And I just want to share as we wrap up today that I so appreciate you willing. You came on the podcast. You had listened to previous episodes. You really took the time to get to know our profit designers and the conversations that we have here. I cannot wait to see in our Profit by Design podcast Facebook group insights, the ahas, the questions that people have. I really feel like our podcast is a way of starting the conversation. And I think we've started a tremendous conversation here. And it's because you showed up as you, you were vulnerable. And there are some things that you shared that are really challenging to grapple with. And I'm very curious to see what our profit designers do with this, Anne.
Well, it's like I said to you, I love your podcast. When I listen to the past episodes, what struck me was that the depth, you go deeper. It's the deeper level of questioning. It's the why we do what we do. What makes us do what we do? And what can we do different? So it was like all these, oh, I love this. I can't wait to meet this woman.
Well, thank you for that. I'm honored you joined us today, and I look forward to you and I continuing our conversation.
Thank you for inviting me on your show.
Are you ready to be the leader you need to be to have the business that gives you your life back? If so, you may be a good fit for our small group coaching program at Tap the Potential. You can apply directly by going to profitgift.com, all one word, profitgift.com. What are you waiting for? Your life is waiting for you. Thank you for spending time with us today. Join our conversation in the Profit by Design podcast Facebook group. Share your thoughts on today's episode, ask us questions, and let us know what you want to hear about next. Visit our website at profitbydesignpodcast.com to access resources from our sponsors and tools we've created for you. Subscribe to the show on whatever platform you're listening to right now. There's a subscribe button right there. Go ahead and hit it so that you always get a notification when we release a new episode. And finally, share our podcast with a friend if you know a friend who would enjoy it. Thanks again for listening. This is real life business. Keep your chin up, keep moving forward. You got this.